to 95.9 KGVM, Gallatin Valley Community Radio. This is Spirit of the Valley, and I'm your host, Katie Michael Sanchez. Our new theme music today was composed by Kyle Sorensen. This show invites people from the Gallatin Valley to talk about faith and spirituality, the ups and downs of being human, and seeking connection with something bigger. When I'm not on the radio, I work as a healthcare chaplain and interfaith spiritual director. Today's guest is Sean Phoenix. Sean has been a psychotherapist for more than 26 years and a shamanic healing practitioner, teacher, and mentor for more than 30, and has created and led a vast array of women's spirituality gatherings and retreats over the years. She is passionate about creating sacred space in which people can discover and cultivate their own relationships with the divine as they experience it. This work includes crafting unique rituals and ceremonies, and Sean has facilitated many weddings, baby blessings, house blessings, and other initiatory rites for individuals, families, and communities. Sean is also half of Many Hands Light Work, along with her wife, Stormy O'Shun. Many Hands Light Work builds upon the theme of sacred play and brings drumming, music, and creative exploration to communities near and far. Adding to the fun, Sean is a member of Ya Ma Ma, an all-woman world music and dance ensemble, which brings music from cultures around the world alive with song, drum, and dance. When not working, Sean finds renewal on the beautiful mountain trails, in her glorious gardens, and by reading, writing, and making joyful noise with her guitar, piano, and drum, usually not all at the same time. Sean, thanks so much for joining me today. Let's jump right in.
Well, I think I made my way to shamanism. I think I've been making my way there my whole life. And I didn't really realize it until I learned the word and learned about the practice and the belief system. But then when I look back at the story of my life, I really see it showing up all throughout. I think just that I was such a nature baby. My parents loved camping. Some of my earliest memories are of being outdoors. And my brother and I were not the best of friends. So when we would go camping and we'd not have any of our usual playmates, we didn't necessarily turn to each other. So I had a lot of time to be alone in nature. And I just naturally had the sense of it being very good for me. It was just a place where I felt whole, a place where I felt at ease, where I felt at home, whether we were in campgrounds or on the beach or even in my mom's in the backyard. There was always kind of a sense of the natural world being full of beings who were benevolent and loving. I mean, even I remember as a little child, when we would have our Christmas tree set up in the living room, I would spend the evening, sometimes the family would be somewhere else. I would just lay under the tree and I would talk to it like it was a friend of mine. And I remember things like a trip to Scotland when I was a pretty small child and we were driving along beside a lake, a loch. And I looked out the window and it was a really windy day and there were a lot of waves on the water. But when I looked out, they weren't moving. They were like in suspended animation in mid-crest. It was really kind of shocking and strange and magical. And I remember trying to get my parents' attention. Look at the what? Yes, honey. Nobody looked and nobody noticed, but I had this I was probably seven or something, and I had the sense of like, this is magic. This is powerful. This is important. And I just stared for the longest time, and eventually they started moving again. But yeah, so that sense, the thing in me when I was a little kid, that when there would be a big summer rainstorm, I grew up back east where rainstorms in the summer were really warm and benevolent, and I would go running outside with my bare feet and just let myself get soaked. It was like I just kept seeking these ecstatic experiences where I would it wasn't so much losing myself, but like finding myself. And finding myself in a way that like there was no judgment. There was no, here's how you're a good person, here's how you're a bad person, color inside the lines. Just complete acceptance, complete freedom. And that feeling that the flowers in the garden, the bushes, the squirrels, all the living things were sentient and had, I didn't even have the language for it, but had spirit, had sacredness. And go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if, did that fit into, like, was there any religious world that you were also part of as a child or spiritual community? Mm-hmm. And like, was that in sync, or were they, like you were saying, like you didn't have someone sort of saying this is the right and wrong way, or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was raised with a pretty easygoing kind of religious foundation. My family, my parents both came from different Christian traditions, but the farthest back I can remember, we went to a Unitarian church back east, and we went every week religiously for many years, where I wasn't taught what to think or what to believe. I was taught how to think, and I was taught how to ask questions and how to seek. And I got to learn about a lot of different religious traditions. I was taught kind of like, what are the values they have in common, and how do these traditions guide people in being good people and in creating good community? How do we take care of each other? So I did have like a strong moral code and strong values. And I didn't feel any sense of like, you are a Christian, even though we did Christmas and we celebrated Easter. And I remember as a little kid, we had this book that we would read at bedtime that was Best Loved Bible Stories. And I thought it was fascinating. And I loved the pictures. There were beautiful full color paintings in the book of all the different stories. I was really fascinated by it, but there was no like, you must believe this and this is the only truth. That just was never the message. It was more like, oh, isn't this amazing and interesting? So kind of the judgments and the you should, you shouldn't, that all came from the secular parenting style and, you know, school and being taught how to be, not be a little criminal, be a good member of society. It was more that than overt kind of religious prescription.
So from your nature-loving little child self, when you were saying you didn't sort of have the language for what you were experiencing or doing, where did you end up finding that? How did that come into your life?
Yeah, I think that it came through, really, it kind of came through women's community, through women that I have loved and just been in friendships and sisterhoods. Throughout the years, I remember spending time creating women's circles, like women's drum circles or women's ceremonial circles, and having a real organic kind of sense of discovering what sacred impulses inside, from the inside of us, wanted to be expressed into the outside. And through that, I ended up doing some reading and discovering and being really excited about witchcraft, paganism, women's spirituality, the divine feminine, goddess worship. And it just felt like a real organic process that just happened through important friendships in my life. And so traveling along that river for a while, there was very much a sense of Mother Earth and the earth as a sacred being, and this sense of Gaia, and the interconnection, which is also part of the Unitarian belief system, that we have respect for the interdependent web of all of existence. So that was it in me already. But then that sense of that the sacred is reflected in the natural world was so clear and resonant for me. So by the time one of those wonderful woman friends went to a weekend workshop to learn about shamanism, she came home after her weekend and was so excited and lit up and just had so much to share with me. The pump was primed. I was ready to learn about this form, this cosmology, but even more kind of like it was a practice. Here's things you can do to have these experiences. And that was really exciting. So that's kind of what opened the door to get me to start peeking around in the world of shamanism. Shortly after that, I took my own, did my own experience with that introductory workshop, lovely weekend workshop, where I just began to learn a little bit of the foundations of shamanism and shamanic practice. That was 35 years ago or so.
So it would be great. I'm sure many of our listeners probably don't have any experience with shamanism or shamanic practice. And my first question is, do you call yourself, if you were to call yourself, are you a shaman or are you a shamanic practitioner? Like, what is the language you use for yourself in that?
Yeah, I use the phrase shamanic practitioner.
And
I do that very intentionally. In traditional shamanic cultures, people don't call themselves shamans. And people who do call themselves shamans are kind of like waving a red flag. Because really, in those cultures, it's known that a person doesn't call themselves that. Their community calls them that. It's all based on results, because a shamanic practitioner is, it's about healing. It's about alleviating suffering. It's about creating more peace and more power and more health in a community and in individuals and in the environment. And so it's really results-based. I don't call myself a shaman, but I have been practicing for all those years.
So what does that practice look like? If you could kind of, you know, talk through the basics of what that practice is and does.
So the basic, in a nutshell, idea behind shamanism is that there is more to our reality than what we can perceive in our ordinary senses, and even more than we can perceive with our scientific instrumentation, that there are other realms, other vibrational dimension, and that there is existence in those. There are beings, for lack of a better word. There's sentience, there's consciousness in these other realms. And those other realms interpenetrate this realm that practitioners would call ordinary reality, when we're not in a trance state, when we're not engaging with those other realms. And those beings, a lot of them have great compassion and they have great power and they would like to help us have better lives for the highest good of all. And so in shamanism, we get ourselves into an altered state. So with my practice, it's based on repetitive drumming. It's called sonic driving. Just with this one basic boring drum beat, it gets my brain into a very lightweight kind of trance. I'm still aware of the room I'm in, and I could certainly leave if there was a fire or answer the phone if I had to. But I'm in enough of a trance that I can access, I get into a different state of consciousness, and I can access those other realms and meet up with some other beings and communicate with them and receive information from them. I can beseech them for help on behalf of a client, and they teach me healing modalities. They show me and tell me ways that I can help other people, and they affect healing during that event, which is called a journey. when a practitioner will go into that trance, it's called a shamanic journey, because the basic concept is that a part of our soul is leaving our body, going to these other realms. So it's a journey. It's a big concept in a little nutshell there.
I'm curious about, I mean, for me, you know, this is something I've only been introduced to in the last couple of years in these kind of specifics that you're talking about. You know, I've heard the term shaman, I think, you know, we all have, but again, like you were saying, sort of maybe in that red flag kind of someone saying that about themselves sort of way, maybe not really actually what they're doing, but it seems like something that, because it is sort of outside of what's culturally normal in our, you know, Western world, if there was any like bumps on that road of the kind of getting into that sort of world that maybe seems like kind of beyond what we normally talk about or believe in.
I think that the biggest kind of obstacle or challenge for me has been in the intersections I've had with people who come from a very conservative religious foundation, who have been taught and who believe very restrictive kind of things about what's good, what's bad, what's okay, what's not okay. For example, I remember back when my daughter was really little, she was probably still in daycare. And so that's more than 30 years ago. And one of her little friends, I'm not sure exactly how the information became available to her friend's mom, but her little friend was barred from coming over and playing at our house because the friend reported, because Nikai's mommy was a witch and that was evil and bad. So that was kind of frustrating to experience that, mostly for my daughter, because she was a friend. I remember much later when she was dating, there was a boyfriend that she had who was Catholic, who really wanted to restrict my daughter's relationship with me, because he knew about my shamanic practice. And his belief was, if you are talking to spirits, they are evil. The only spirit that is good to talk to is Jesus. If you're talking to anybody else, they're on the team of the other guy. So that as well was pretty frustrating, especially because I've had these long, rich relationships with spirit guides, helpers, angelic beings, power animals, these beings who are so loving and compassionate and have great senses of humor and are intelligent and insightful, and to have them just kind of written off as evil just feels really disrespectful to me. It's like, no, they're my colleagues and my friends and my helpers. What are you saying?
It also makes sense to me, you know, coming from a framework that like you're saying, that for that gentleman, like, that he understands good to be one thing and evil to be another, and that inflexibility. In my work as spiritual director, I'm often working with people who are coming from a religion or tradition that was harmful in some way, you know, that taught them ideas about a God that is judgmental or vengeful or those kind of things that were really damaging. And they're like, okay, well, I still feel called to connect with spirit. I still have these experiences, but like, what do I make of them? Because they don't fit into this context. So I can imagine that sort of shift into like, hey, let's go visit some of them. You know, the only stories they know are these ones that are harmful. Hurtful, you know, so making that transition. But I think it's interesting, your story coming out of Unitarianism, where you, like you were talking about, kind of had this, I also grew up Unitarian Universalist, and I always called it the choose your own adventure religion, but yeah. Like that there is that spaciousness for, mm-hmm. you know, go find what works and what resonates. And so that I just, yes. in my mind, the way your story is, it feels like there was this ease of transition where there wasn't this like,
right.
oh no, this thing is scary, or oh no, like what is this? Right. But just that sort of gentle transition into like, ah, oh, this feels like this is the language I was looking for.
Yeah, I didn't have to do any kind of semantic detoxification, mm-hmm. kind of clearing away any shame programming to, mm-hmm. to get there. And really, it's so funny because like some of the helpers that I've experienced and met, like I in more than one occasion, I have met Jesus mm-hmm. in journeys and witnessed him doing incredible healing. For clients. And I'm in a circle with 9 other shamanic practitioners. We get mm-hmm. together every week, we journey for other people and for ourselves. And in our group, we have a little nickname for Jesus. We call him the One Touch Healer.
Mm.
He is a lovely being to hang out with and talk with and learn from. And I have no need to identify as a Christian to really embrace what a profound, amazing teacher and healer mm. and presence he is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little, it's startling when folks who love the same spirit I love tell mm-hmm. me that I'm wrong for the way I meet up with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do want to also speak to, I know that there's often the idea that shamanism is a Native American thing
mm-hmm.
or that it belongs to a specific culture. And mm-hmm. often there's kind of the concern about cultural appropriation
right.
with that. But the word shaman comes from Lapland, and it's a Sami, traditional Sami culture word that I don't know exactly how to pronounce it. It looks like salmon. But it basically means shaking tent. And it's for the ceremonies they would do where the shaman would be doing healing work and people would be in the tent and they'd turn off the lights. The shaman would call the spirits and people would perceive the walls of the tent shaking and they would feel like animals brushing up against them. They'd feel fur, they'd smell the smells of animals, they'd hear them. They couldn't see in the dark, but they had a strong understanding of there are a lot of spirits packed into this tent all of a sudden, and the tent was shaking. So that's where the word shaman comes from. And this practice, this core cosmology exists. There's records of it in every culture on the planet. Mm. So, what I practice is not, there are cultural variations certainly between Nubian shamans and Native American and Siberian and they're everywhere. We're everywhere. And I'm a Celt. I'm from the British Isles. Mm-hmm. There's a strong shamanic tradition there as well. The place where I studied shamanism, it's called the Foundation for Shamanic Studies. And they basically throughout decades have had anthropologists and other folks kind of researching shamanic culture and practice all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very excited to discover that despite these some cultural variations, there was way more that these various practitioners had in common than they had that was different. And so it's not like they've been communicating with each other
right.
for these thousands of years before we had the internet or cell phones.
Right.
But still, they're all understanding that there's a lower world, a middle world, an upper world. There are helping spirits. There are harmful spirits. Here's how you make contact with them. Here's how you work with them. Here's how you keep yourself safe when you're doing this. And so those elements that the researchers for the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, what they found that were in common, they distilled those down. And that's what they teach in their practice mm-hmm. for people who want to do it, not just learn about it. And they call that core shamanism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the things that all shamanic cultures have in common. So I'm not appropriating anybody else's culture. Right. This is my culture. It feels to me like it has bubbled up from the earth into all these different places where humans have been seeking for help and guidance.
Yeah, and I think that piece of the appropriation, I think, comes more when it's like there are like particular ceremonies or a particular practice that is like specific to a group that someone wants to like try on without knowing any of the rest of what's happening or, you know, really. And so I love this approach that you're talking about where it's like, no, this is the through line that like everyone can tap into. And then like, maybe you find like your Celtic ancestors also had a specific practice that you can like get into along, you know, within that, but that like, that's really different than being like, oh, I am a white person and I do a sweat lodge that like I just made up myself, you know?
Right. Yes. Yeah. And I know some cultures will use like psychotropic plants, peyote or ayahuasca or datura or ergot. Those aren't so much my cultures. I'm not really interested in going and doing an ayahuasca ceremony because I haven't grown up in the culture that would hold me and help me understand that experience in a really rich way. It's not mine. But all over the world, people have used sonic driving. They've used the repetitive drum beat to be able to get into the trance. So that belongs to me as well.
Yeah. Have you done any sort of exploration of things particular to Celts that you incorporate, or are you really just like the core shamanism is the piece?
Yeah, my practice is very much core shamanism. I haven't really brought in anything culturally specific. Some of the things I'm learning though, when I journey and I connect, there are some beings that I've been connecting with who are very clear about my lineage and how important it is for me to connect to them and listen to them and learn from them. And that's really just been happening like probably in the last 4 or 5 years. So that's kind of a new unfolding for me, which I'm really enjoying. Yeah, I discovered it at a training I was doing. And just during one of the journeys, I was meeting with the fairy folk of the British Isles. And I was really surprised to meet them. And I was asking them about a pain I had had in my body for like a decade or more. Feeling under a shoulder blade. Like the way I described it was like, it's like an arrow lodged there in a past life. And it's still kind of stuck there. And this being of the Fae said, oh yeah, that was us. We shot you there. And there's a rope attached to it because we are keeping a hold on you. You've been getting all interested in smudging, Native American spirituality. You know, I've been living in Montana and this stuff was bubbling up from the soil here.
Yeah.
And they were like, we really respect and honor that the spirits of the land that you inhabit now, but you need to remember you belong to us. You need to step away from the things that you're learning there in Montana and start remembering your heritage. They kind of called me out in the middle of this journey. And I came back from the journey and my shoulder blade felt really good. And it hasn't bugged me since.
Wow.
Pretty crazy.